show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And we've got a bit of a wild card update for you folks, although you probably don't need an update if you're listening to this show, as you're probably a Royals fan who's been hanging on the edge of their seat like all the rest of us. But we'll get into some in-depth discussion in terms of wild card there. But first, introductions. With me is the precariously flummoxed about the Royals' current state of play, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this tepid, we'll call it, Kansas City evening? I'm not sure what the weather is like in Lawrence, but it's slightly cloudy, but not quite rainy, not hot, but not quite cool either. It's one of those weird kind of transitional into fall days that sometimes happen in Missouri. It's neither bad nor good, just kind of like that episode of Family Guy where they go to purgatory.
It is. It was muggy most of the day, I thought, but that's, you know. That's,
I don't, I'm an accountant, so I don't go outside much. But
I just know from my car to the door at work, and yeah, that's about the same kind of thing. So I
went to New Orleans with the wife this past weekend. Right. So I was a little out of touch with the Royals because, believe it or not, they don't play Royals baseball that often down in Louisiana. But anyway, first vacation away from the little one went pretty well. But they're getting, you know, obviously they get some residuals from the hurricane, from the hurricane in Florida on the Gulf Coast there. Mm-hmm. And so we got some pretty like big shifts, you know, just like randomly lots of rain and then would kind of dissipate. But man, like the first day was great. But then the first day that it rained, which was like our second day there, rained for an hour, maybe two. And then it stopped. And then we went outside and it's just like, man, like you need a knife to cut through the air as you walk. It's so thick, you know, like just that humidity, just real thick. I mean, you kind of feel it up here in the Midwest, but not quite like it is down there. It's just like, just that almost knocks you over. So
I can only imagine.
At least it isn't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we kind of have it okay, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. They had a lot of flooding and stuff down there too, before all that got in there.
They did. And it was just Louisiana. Like, they actually, that's what's on the, we were watching the local news when we were there one night and they had, the governor was requesting federal aid from the president for the areas that were affected. So pretty intense stuff. But thankfully, don't have to worry too much about that here. And all we have to worry about is Royals baseball. But first, possibly the most important news here. The Rally Mantis has officially been retired by the Kansas City Royals. He was transitioned to an animal sanctuary where he was allowed to run free on the farm. And the Royals said they, as fun as it was to have Rally Mantis around, they started to feel bad about toting this poor, poor bug, even though I'm sure it lived a life better than any bug you've ever seen. But toting it on planes and into dugouts and clubhouses and all such. So I'm guessing Billy Burns asked for a raise and they said no more. So they set the mantis free. But you know, Mike, I was thinking about this. Okay. So, you know, there's no need for a physical Rally Mantis to be there. The Rally Mantis will always be there in spirit. You look at the Angels and the Rally Monkey. They didn't actually have a monkey in the dugout. Okay. Played a little video of a monkey on the scoreboard. When you look at the St. Louis Cardinals and the Rally Squirrel, they didn't go and find and keep the squirrel. The squirrel just ran onto the field and then ran off. And that was it, right? So they didn't just keep the squirrel in a cage in the dugout, okay? So, but there was still the Rally Squirrel. So The Rally Mantis doesn't have to be there to still be the Rally Mantis, okay? It's the collective thought of all Royals fans makes the Rally Mantis ever present in our minds. So
I wish they had a real monkey, though. That would have been hilarious.
That would be
a Disney movie.
Than a mantis if they had a real monkey.
Right?
Be awesome.
You could put it in uniform.
Oh, dude.
It'd be like Ed, not terrible.
Oh, man. It'd be like the monkey on Friends, Marcel.
Yeah.
And then that would have been so funny.
Yeah.
Like, imagine Salvador Perez and, like, the monkey getting in a little fight. Like, the monkey takes his hat. Sal Perez tries to dump water on the monkey.
You could teach the monkey to do the splash.
They make the little mini Gatorade buckets. They sell the Gatorade powder in.
Oh, yeah.
You could give him one of those. That's, like, perfect.
That's it.
To scale size for a little monkey. Oh, damn it, man.
Yeah, now we just need monkey to land on Billy Burns's cap.
I know. It's only 15 years late on this monkey thing. There was so much potential there.
There's less than a month left. It's just, where are we going to find a monkey in that?
Where are we going to find a monkey? How are we going to try and pretend like this is an organic thing happening?
And you got to train it.
You know, you gotta find a little Gatorade bucket for it. I mean, as much power as the Kansas City Baseball Vault has, I don't know that we can work that fast. Yep.
2017 goals.
Yes, so. Maybe we shoot for 2017 for the rally, the bucket dumping monkey.
Yeah, you have to call it something different because Rally Monkey is probably trademarked.
Rally Monkey is taken. So Rally Mantis, I don't know. That's, we got a whole off season to figure that out.
Right.
Speaking of which, we're still trying to determine when that off season will begin. Last two seasons, it's gone into November. Who knows if it'll even go into October this year. Right now, the Kansas City Royals are ready to begin their game tonight. It's Wednesday, September 7th, as we record. So as they are ready to begin their night, they are 3.5 games back of the Baltimore Orioles for the second wild card spot. What are they? 3 games back of the Tigers?
2.5.
2.5 and a half game behind the Houston Astros, right? Or is the Yankees?
Full game behind Houston and half game behind the Yankees, yeah.
That is okay. Full game behind
Houston. Going into, this is Wednesday Wednesday evening, so the Orioles have already lost today and the Tigers have already lost today. So all the other games are currently starting or still to come or whatever. So, but they're still behind. You know, a couple teams, Toronto and Boston, are tied. There's still these other teams that they have to jump over. It's just, you know, it's a mess. it is primed for chaos if it works out that way.
If only it was the National League. You've got three teams all within a game and a half of each other. And then the next closest is 5.5 games out of the second spot. So, I mean, the next closest, the gap between the second wild card in the National League and that team, which is the Pittsburgh Pirates, is, let's see, there would be 4 teams ahead of that just in terms of differential. And record. Five teams ahead of them. So, yeah, I mean, just to put a point of how much more muddled the picture is in the American League than it is in the National League. So,
yeah,
going to be a fun finish to the American League. I'm sure the Royals, you know, they're kind of in that spot where that 2013 spot where they're doing just enough to give you hope, but not enough to actually put themselves in a good position. And yeah. The main reason I say make that comment is from last week. Take away the most recent two games they've won against the Twins, and the 6 games before that, they had a real, real good chance to make a move, make some noise. 3 games against New York, 3 games against Detroit. Those 6 games, they couldn't make, they could, you know, obviously a sweep of all six puts them really good position right now. They would be at 78-60 and they'd be in the second wild card spot, but that didn't happen. And we didn't expect that to happen, but they went 2-4 and they had a chance to win all six games and they lost all four games by a total of four runs.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a situation here where it's just one of those, it wasn't like a heartbreak thing. You know, it's not like, oh, the Royals, you know, they did have a couple extra inning losses, but not, you know, something that you're just like, oh man, that's hard. But just one of those kind of gut check, gut punch weeks of, you know, they happen in baseball. It's unfortunate that it happened at this time against those particular teams.
All in but a swing, row, all in the same homestand.
Yeah, you know, swing two of those games the other way and they go 4-2 instead, then now they're ahead of Houston and you're ahead of, depending on, you know, where those games come from, you're ahead of Houston, you're ahead of New York. Let's say
you're probably in the same spot Detroit is right now.
Yeah, so say you win two more games, you flip one against New York and one against Detroit each, so then you're tied with Detroit and you're ahead of New York and you're ahead of Houston. And you're a game and a half out of the second wild card spot.
Yep.
So I mean,
with the soft underbelly of their schedule right now, of their remaining schedule right now, it'd be prime position for them to start making a move. And they really, it was a missed opportunity in a lot of situations in that last homestand.
And let's actually, before we go into the forthcoming schedule, let's kind of run this back. And Mike, you were telling me earlier about how, I mean, to get an idea of how fragile this season has been, walk us through what could have happened, starting with the chain reaction of Chris Young coming in with the team up 8-1 late in the game, and how this starts a chain reaction that could have, you know, for lack of a better term, torpedoed the Royals season.
Well, that whole situation, like, you know, that Monday's game or August 29th, they're up 8-1. Chris Young comes in. You know, all you're wanting to do is get guys out, get them out. That's all he needs to do. And he doesn't. He faces four batters. They all score. They all score. They all get on base. They all score. So it ends up getting to this stage where Peter Moylan has to come in. And Peter Moylan gets a couple of outs, but then you still have to go to Kelvin Herrera in the end because more runners get on. So you end up winning that game 8-5, but it's a spot where you really wanted Chris Young to go two more innings for you, save the rest of the guys. So the next night, the Royals, you know, they open up. That was the night that they fell behind. Right away, they were down 3-0 after the first. They were down 4-0, or that was after the second inning. So going into the third, bottom of the third, they're down 4-0 against Matsusaka. No, what am I thinking? Tanaka. Why am I thinking Daisuke for some reason? I'm very sorry. That's a terrible mistake. So you've kind of figured you're down 4-0 to the Yankees in that situation. You kind of write that game off. And the Royals come back and they tie it. And they get into situations where, you know, they have opportunity to win the game. You know, not only do you salvage what was a sure loss at one point, you get to a stage where you could just, you know, win that game in comeback fashion, you know, just like last year. But in the process, you still have to use up. You know, Brian Flynn has to work a second day, and Moylan works again, and Matt Strom has to get four outs, and Joaquin Soria comes in, and he has a really tough inning, and they almost get out of it, if, you know, just barely. And even despite Soria giving up the lead, the Royals end up stranding two guys at the end, you know, and then you just keep working it to where, you know, the next night they blow a 4-0 lead, it goes 13 innings, you basically have a wiped out bullpen. This is August 31st, so you don't even have rosters expanded. You don't have the extra pitchers. Wade Davis isn't around yet, so you still have to use Matt Strom and Chris Young and Peter Moylan and Brian Flynn and all of these guys. And so now, you know, those are wiped out, and I don't think we've seen Matt Strom pitch since then. That was the second day in a row that he's pitched. So now, you know, you get an actual off day on Thursday. That's great. Wade Davis comes back September 2nd. This is that game against the Tigers where the Royals take the lead in the bottom of the eighth. They hadn't used Kelvin Herrera. There was a lot of argument after the fact on Twitter. I was one of the folks that was like, it's Davis, so I was okay with that. But it was curious that Herrera, having not pitched recently, wasn't an option. And given that Davis and Herrera are both strong relievers, I felt like maybe you don't want to work Davis back, you know, until he's maybe seen a better situation or something. Davis, Beansy, and Kinsler gives up a double, gives up a single, blows the lead. The Royals lose it. That was probably the heartbreaker, because that's the one where the Royals went through all that trouble to come back and end up losing it. And then again on Sunday, it's the same kind of thing. You're still kind of taxed on the bullpen. You don't have Strom. You got to keep using Moylan. You can't use Davis and Herrera every day. So you get to a point where, Joaquim Soria is covering innings. He gives up a home run to Upton in the eighth, you know, comes off to boos. I mean, just miserable. The Royals just blew leads. And that was after making a number of comebacks. You know, they made three different comebacks that they could have won the game, or, you know, where they tied it or took the lead, and it ended up being squandered. So they did all of that and got a loss out of it in the end anyway. And so it was just so frustrating to watch when you're in the middle of this pennant race. Every game means so much more, or at least it feels like it means more. And you are kind of at the mercy of which guys you have fresh, which guys went the day before. And a lot of it starts because Chris Young couldn't get guys out in that game on August 29th. So you kind of end up behind everything trying to run uphill with, you know, a wet hill, wind coming down and everything else. Mm-hmm. So it was difficult. And the thing is, they could have won any of those games. There were so many opportunities where they could have just fly ball. You know, that'll do it. Paulo Orlando had a couple of shots where, you know, hit the ball hard, but it was right at somebody. There was they had the winning run on base, and he lines out to Starlin Castro in one of those Yankee games. And that keeps the game going. The Royals end up losing it, still using all those pitchers. You know, and that's kind of the worst thing, is when you go into extra innings, especially when you have like a 13-inning game, you want to win that game. If you're going through the trouble of burning through all your relief arms, you want to win that game, and the Royals couldn't pull it off. And now they're in the spot where they're in now, where, you know, they still have a lot of work to do, and, you know, they have some games to make up that they probably could have chalked up as wins, and, you know, it's a big test for them the rest of the way. And, you know, it's difficult. It was, you know, I think a lot of Royals fans, especially on Twitter, and Twitter's maybe not the best gauge, but a lot of fans were kind of grinding their teeth and just, you know, phoning it in, giving it up and everything. You know, they're not out of it. The Royals aren't out of it, but they do have a lot of work that they got to do.
I think what's most frustrating in this scenario is, okay, Chris Young, huge piece of the team last year, gave them a lot of innings that they needed, showed up big in the playoffs, especially the World Series and those extra inning games. You know, that's all great. Got himself a deserved contract in the offseason. You know, I don't think anyone thought he was going to be as good as he was last year, you know, for an extended period of time. But I also don't think anybody thought, oh, man, he's going to be awful, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really tough to see, you know, Chris Young having such a rough season. But the most disappointing fact is, okay, he started out as a starter. That wasn't working. He's been in the bullpen. He's had struggles there. So he's no longer really asked to be in any high leverage situations or to really do anything outside of his comfort zone, which is, you know what, just get the ball across the plate and keep it in the ballpark. And yep. Let the defense take care of it, you know, and that's essentially all he's asked to do. And you're put in a situation, you've got a 7-run lead. You need to keep it tight, but not in the sense of the score, but, you know, just keep everything, you know, just kind of do a couple 1-3 innings. Maybe you give up a hit, you know, whatever, Just keep it under control.
Give up a run. Just, you know, don't, you know, don't let it get out of hand like it did.
Don't give up four runs and don't force the hand of the manager. And unfortunately, that's what he did. So that's probably the most disappointing aspect to me. I mean, you could have, you know, any number of things can go wrong, but that one particular thing to go wrong, then, you know, like you so greatly explained, you've got all this kind of chain reaction that I'm not going to say it caused these losses, because obviously you got to score more runs, you got to not let, you know, the other pitchers got to step up and not not let
Davis has to make his pitches, Soria has to make his pitches, all the starters have to take care of it too, you know, so it's the whole team thing, but it does amplify, you know, if you've got a short bullpen or if you have guys that you're not necessarily comfortable with. Like, there was one point Brooks Pounders came in against, I think it was the top of the Tigers lineup in one of those games, and it's like, that's not a spot you want to be in. Nothing against Brooks Pounders, but he's, you know, he's made his major league debut this year. He's kind of just a guy, middle relief type of profile. He made it through. He got through it. And so then when you get to that thing where, okay, a guy steps up and looks good and looks better than maybe you expect, then you really want to win it because you kind of got a gift there. And you know, the Royals were just put in position where they didn't have their best options available to line up the way they wanted them to, and guys didn't execute on the mound or at the plate in big situations. And it, I mean, it stings. It's those are some rough losses. And, you know, if that's what ends up being the short part, that's what people, if the Royals don't make the playoffs, that's what people will remember, will be that homestand, which is fair because they were big games. But there are also, you could probably point to, you know, four games that the Royals probably should have won at other points in the season, or four games that they probably had no business winning that they kind of stole away.
Right.
You know, so I mean, it probably evens out, but at the same time, you know, the big moments stand out because they're big moments.
Well, we've heard the stat recently about Joaquin Soria, and, you know, it seems like the Royals team this year, Joaquin Soria has almost been a good microcosm of that, where he's been phenomenal in stretches, horrid in stretches. So there's been a lot of talk of this stat we've heard, that there have been 12 times where Joaquin Soria has come into the game and given up the lead, or, you know, in a tie or a tie ball game, or the Royals have had the lead and he has given up the lead to the other team. So I haven't researched that myself, but that's the stat that people have been throwing around recently. So, you know, when you look at that, and Danny Parkins on 610, I was listening the other day, he made a good point where he said, okay, people call in and they bring that up and they want to say, okay, well, somebody else, you know, the Royals shouldn't have signed Joaquin Soria, and so they want somebody else in there, and theoretically this other person that they have in there wouldn't have blown these 12 times, and the Royals would be 12 games better, and they'd be one of the best teams in baseball right now, you know. But, you know, the point is, okay, first of all, you're assuming that in 12 opportunities, this particular pitcher, whoever this unicorn pitcher is, is perfect in those 12 scenarios, and also the other situations where Joaquin Soria was already perfect, that this pitcher was also perfect in those scenarios. So, you know, you saying that, you know, they maybe lost some they shouldn't, but they probably won some that they shouldn't have either. You know, like really early in the season, what was that? They had that walk off. Was it Gore scoring on the wild pitch
against the Twins? Yeah, there was that. That big comeback against the White Sox, and
with 8 runs in the 9th inning or whatever it was.
That's two that's there. Baseball. Yeah, I mean, it happens. There was that game in Boston where they scored 7 or 8 runs in that one inning, where it just kind of kept going. It was like that happens sometimes. Those are games that they probably, if you ran simulations from the point where they started to take it back over, they probably don't win those games most of the time, but they won them. And that's, you know, that's part of what this team is. But at the same time, you know, most of the time the numbers even out, or, you know, sometimes the guys just don't make the pitch. I mean, you know, if people are complaining about, oh, Soria, you know, and you have to have the expectation of perfection from a guy like that. Well, Wade Davis gave up 2 runs against Detroit in this same stretch. And, you know, I think the circumstances might have been part of it because he hadn't faced big league hitters in 5 weeks, but he's still Wade Davis. You know, he's still the guy that you expect to be in there. And at the same time, if you don't expect him to be able to get those outs in that spot, then, you know, maybe he shouldn't be coming back yet. That's, you know, it's fairly reasonable to me. At the same time, you know, Soria needs to make the pitches. Davis needs to make the pitches. Other guys down the line need to make, you know, those pitches. And if there's going to be damage, at least minimize it. And it's not always happening that way, or at least not in that last homestand. And, you know, it's disheartening because that's the bullpen and that's the Royals' bread and butter. But that's how it works sometimes, you know. I mean, it's pretty crazy that the Royals have been able to have such a strong bullpen for so many years when most of the time that's usually a pretty volatile area for teams where you might have a really good year and then you have a pretty average year and then you might even be bad the next year. And the Royals have been excellent most every year, which is unusual, but it's also kind of their thing. So, you know, I get the consternation over it, I suppose. And I, you know, that's not to completely let Soria off the hook. I think the hate goes too far. I think it gets irrational. But he has given up leads in big spots. I mean, there's no denying that. The assumption, I think, always ends up being that whoever else would not have. And I think if most of the time the circumstances are that the other person that might be an option would be like Pounders or Scott Alexander or, you know, Chengming Wong when he was healthy. He's on the DL now. And I don't think you can make that expectation from those guys just because they're not tested in those situations and their talent level is probably not the same. And so I don't think that's a very fair criticism all the time. Nonetheless, you know, Soria has had a rough season. You know, Wade Davis had that rough appearance. It's not all perfect, but, you know, the Royals, you know, hopefully on the whole, they're going to have better performances from their bullpen and maybe more guys available, maybe better rested the rest of the way with expanded rosters. I don't know. Maybe that'll help so that the Royals can kind of go with the game plan that they want. And don't run into a situation like that last homestand where they were basically, you know, going with whoever hadn't thrown 20 pitches the night before and see what works. And, you know, they kind of got stuck in a weird spot and, you know, still, you know, it's still rough. You still hope that they pull out two more of those games or one more of those games or something. Yeah. Just don't lose them all. Yeah. Was the tough part. And they lost all those close games, which it was tough.
In a little bit of perspective, you know, the Royals currently have the best bullpen ERA in baseball. Okay, so, you know, we talk about how you're saying how they've been able to just churn out these good bullpens year after year, and it really has been quite impressive, and they've still been really good this year, even though Joaquin Soria's had a rough year. And, you know, there've been moments that you think, okay, the 2014, 2015 Royals, maybe they don't lose that game. Maybe Wade Davis doesn't give up two home runs in that scenario. These are the type of things that happen. But also in the vein of perspective, you look at, okay, you know, Wade Davis came in, gave up those two runs, blew the save. But, you know, first of all, if Wade Davis if he's healthy and he's back in, he's your closer, he's your guy, he's one of the best relievers in baseball, you know, you put him in. So, you know, there's the argument to be made that, you know, like you were talking about earlier, okay, maybe you work him back up, you know, say, okay, the closer's your role, but we're not going to throw you in right away. We're going to let you get back used to it, you know, pitching in a major league ballpark, all those things. But, you know, there's also, I definitely see the other side of that argument, which is, hey, if your trainers tell me you're ready to go, if you're telling me you're ready to go, then you better be ready to go, and I'm going to put you in your role, and you better do your job. So I see both sides of it. But, you know, Ned has taken that hardline stance that, you know, your role is your role, and, you know, you're going to have you're going to have it. I'm going to believe you when you tell me you're ready to play. He told him he was ready to play, came in, turned out he wasn't ready. At least in terms of the results, it didn't look like he was ready. But
Yeah, and I would say nine out of 10 times he probably closes that game out fine. It's just that even one time. Off. It's just like, well, that's how it happens.
And remember here, he was coming off – part of the reason people worried about him being rusty is because he's coming off of injury. And you've got – you mentioned that Matt Strom hasn't pitched since that last outing he had where he threw – you know, how many pitches? Two and a half innings did he throw, or two and two-thirds innings did he throw?
And, he did that in Boston, that and then before? He ended up in that homestand he threw 2 days in a row when they didn't want to
That's
do
what
that.
It was. Okay.
And then they got him warmed up like two or three times in one of those games and didn't end up using him, so they weren't going to, you know, if they don't get you in the second time, they're usually not going to use you just because you have to warm up a third time, and they're not going to do that. So, yeah, so it's just he's got like a biceps tendonitis
or something.
So I don't know how long that's going to put him out. I mean, you know, if the Royals don't gain a lot of ground, it might shut him down just because they have eyes on him being in the mix for maybe a rotation spot next, you know, in spring. So they might just want to shut him. He's already passed his innings limits. So if they aren't playing for a spot, there's not much reason to use him other than it's really fun to watch him pitch.
Yeah. And it was, you know, just trying to bring up the point that, okay, you have so many injuries have happened to this team where, you know, Wade Davis, all-world closer, was injured for I'm not sure how the exact number of games that he missed, but, you know, almost a full month. You had, you know, Moose been out for the season. Gordon had an extended absence. Salvador Perez been on the DL a couple times. He's back on it now. I don't know. He's not on the DL, but he's got a bone bruise now after being hit by a pitch. Then you've got Lorenzo Cain, who's been out for an extended period of time, missed an entire month. He is back, but now he's also been out the last few games. And you know, you look at where the Royals are at, and they're still in the mix and all this thing. And, like, I mean, essentially all the key pieces from last year's run have been injured and have been having problems. And so, you know, there's all these things to complain about, and, you know, how quickly this town has gotten used to winning that, you know, being six games over 500, having the best bullpen ERA in baseball, and they're not satisfied. You know, it's just the unknowingly the Royals. This is what when you hear the phrase "victim of your own success," this is exactly what you're talking about. I mean, no, you know, fans aren't truly like they're not turning on the team. It's not 2006 or anything. But
the Royals might only win 87 games.
Oh,
shunned.
No. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of interesting to see how unhappy people are when, you know, 2 years, 2013, we were ecstatic, 10 games above 500. They won 86 games. Man, this is awesome. Just give us some meaningful games in September. This is fun. You know, that was fantastic. And now it's just like, man, this team, you know, they sell it off. It's over, and this type of thing. So it's kind of funny, but just a little perspective. I mean, all the adversity that this team has dealt with and they're still where they are. I mean, that's quite impressive. And you know, now that Wade Davis is back and hopefully they're getting more healthy and, you know, Eric Hosmer's back on an upswing. Kendrys Morales is back on an upswing. You know, you've talked about schedules moving forward, you know, and how, you know, where the Royals could fit in. I mean, you got to look favorably. I do on the Royals schedule. You know, we talk about Baltimore lost today and then. Who do they have? They have six games against coming up against.
They go to Detroit, then they go to Boston, and then they've got three series at home. They've got Tampa, they've got Boston, and Arizona in Baltimore, and then they finish on the road at Toronto and at New York. So you know, those are, you know, what are those? One, two, three, four, five tough series. Arizona won't be like a cakewalk necessarily. I mean, it's not easy, and their starting rotation is not very good. They haven't played very well in the last couple weeks, so that's pretty shaky for them. I mean, I'm not sure that you would put them as a favorite if you were handicapping this. You know, it's just a tough batch of games that they have to go against, you know, some tough teams.
All the while, the Royals are over here with their next 10 games after tonight, so their next 11 games They've got the Twins tonight as we're recording this. And they've got three against the White Sox, four against Oakland, and then three more against the White Sox. They've got 11 games coming up here against teams that are just plain bad. And so, you know, the Royals go 7-3 in that stretch, and the Orioles go 4-6. I mean, boom, right there. There's your three games. And yeah, assuming that's assuming they win tonight, I guess I should say.
Right.
If they win tonight, they'll be three games back, and then they go 7-3 in the next 10. So 8-3 out of the next 11, and then the Orioles go 4-6 in their next 10. And there's your difference right there. And the Royals are, you know, whatever, who knows what Detroit, Houston, New York will do in that time frame as well. But it's just, that's kind of, you know, I mean, that's not attainable. And that's kind of how you have to take it right now, is chunk by chunk, you know. So let's start somewhere. You know, Baltimore, they're kind of reeling right now. Set your sights on them, knowing they have a tough stretch and you have an easier stretch. If you can catch them, you know, that probably means they're going to fall behind a couple other teams. But then, you know, that's one less team you have to worry about that you can kind of hopefully, you know, surpass and then have in your rearview mirror. And, you know, then you start looking at, okay, we've got more games against Detroit, so that's next on the list. And, you know, Detroit's probably going to keep pace somewhat. And so they're not going to be more than three games ahead. I would hope not by the time you play in the next series. So obviously you're asking a lot, because you got to sweep Detroit at that point to, you know, get back. But that's certainly possible. You're going to be at home. So, I mean, you know, these things at this point, the Royals 72-66. So to win 90 games, they'd have to go 18-6, right?
Yeah. Or wait,
18-6. So say
they 88 pretty much games. Have to win every series to get those 18 plus tonight.
Yeah, and say 88 games, or say 88 wins, you know, like the last couple of years has, say that gets you the second wild card spot. You know, last year it was 88 games was one more game than the first wild card spot even. So say 88 games is your number, then they only have to go 17-8, right? I say only, you know, that's a really good record, but the Royals have shown that they can put together that kind of a stretch. And when you think, okay, you got to win 17 out of 25 games, not easy, but it's not one of those things where you say, okay, we have to win 24 out of our last 25 games just to make the second wild card possibly. Right. You know, I mean, that's the kind of things you try and convince yourself of in, you know, 10 years ago as a Royals fan. But you know, now, I mean, that's a realistic possibility, not necessarily probable, but it's something that could happen. So
yeah, it's, if they got really hot and they got the pitching rotation to work at, you know, kind of like they were through most of August, they'd have the opportunity. That's what it will take. Really, like one of the things that I came up, like I was thinking about the other day, I think this was yesterday, was, you know, if it works out that the wild card winner is an 87 win team, I almost feel like that leaves the Royals out, just because it's so just simple for other teams to get to that 87 win spot. You know, like Toronto just needs to win 10 games. I mean, they'll probably win the division, but they just need to win 10 games. Baltimore, for as tough as their schedule is, they just need to win 11 games. But if it's like 90, 91 wins that does it, then the Royals, maybe they, you know, to me, it's almost like, it seems counterintuitive, because you would think, well, they, you know, if you just want the Royals to win fewer games, you know, you give them more margin for error. But I think if they go on an absurd hot streak, that gives them more control over it. And so you're not looking at where, okay, well, we need Baltimore to lose this game, this game, this game, and this game, and Detroit to lose this game, and this game, and this game, and Houston. And, you know, you've got these other teams that you've got to rely on losing the right games. And a lot of them play each other in a lot of situations. New York, you know, four of these are AL East teams. You know, so they're going to be playing each other through the whole thing. So, you know, if Baltimore loses, odds are one of those other teams are probably going to be winning, which you don't want. So the Royals really, if they get just super hot, then, you know, that puts them in a spot where, well, who cares what the other teams do, because we're just going to beat everybody. You know, which the easy part of that kind of task is right now, where they've got the Twins, White Sox, A's, White Sox, like you mentioned. And then they have to play Cleveland, Detroit, Minnesota, and Cleveland to finish it off, which none of, you know, Cleveland and Detroit won't be easy series. They haven't played well against Cleveland. They've played pretty well up until the last series against Detroit. So, I mean, that's, you know, it'd be like, you know, 18 wins. That 18-6 record is pretty much what they kind of have to do at this stage, which isn't impossible. We've seen them do it before, you know, something like that this year and last year and the year before. They could do it. It's just really tough. But, you know,
yeah, I mean, the more absurd, going to. Yeah, I mean, the more absurd the streak is, the more absurd the streak is, the better chance that the Royals have of making it, as you said, because, I mean, that's you put it, though, like you said, counterintuitive, but really makes the most sense that the Royals can't just play really well. They have to be absurdly good. And then it's not going to matter what the other teams do. Cause mm-hmm. it reminds me of the 2006 Kansas City Chiefs. So that team, I know you're not a huge Chiefs fan, Mike, but that team came in the last game of the season. They were 8-7. They needed to win their game, and they needed three other teams who were better than the Chiefs to lose to teams that they were worse than. So three teams that any of them would have won and gotten to the playoffs, and they all got beat by teams that I believe didn't go to the playoffs that year. So don't quote me on that, but they had three teams ahead of them that had to lose, and the Chiefs had to win, and that's exactly what happened, and they got in the playoffs. Now, of course, they got destroyed, but the point is, that's what this team kind of feels like right now, is, okay, the Royals have to go, you know, say they got to go 17 wins, or 88 wins, so they got to go with 16-8 at this point, or 16-9, right? Because they're 72-66. Yeah, so 8. Yeah, 16-8 after tonight. Right? Or wait, my math's all screwed. What's going on here? So we've got
the 72-66. Games, and then they've got 12 against Cleveland, Detroit, Minnesota, and Cleveland. So that's 22 there. They'll have 23 games after tonight. Am I doing 24. The math right?
Yeah, that's right. Because if they go 16-8, they'll be 88-74. That's right. That's right. So, you know, 16-8, now that's not, you know, not too terrible, but then you're looking at, okay, so if they go 16-8, then we kind of did this exercise last week, but then you know, the Yankees have to go 15-9 or worse. Houston has to go 14-10 or worse. Detroit has to go 13-11 or worse. And, you know, all of these teams have been pacing out better than those. Well, I guess the Yankees haven't necessarily, but, you know, Houston, Detroit, they've kind of been outpacing those records. I guess I haven't done the winning percentage, but, and then, you know, same with Baltimore. Baltimore's got to go 12-12 or worse. They've got to go 11-13 or worse. So if that's what, if you're just trying to get to 88 wins, but like you said, if you go to 90 wins, they go 18-6. Then
each of those teams has to just be better.
Yeah.
So tie them or be better than them.
So then Detroit can go 15-11 or 14-12. Wait, 14.
They're 75-64. So they would have to get over 90, they'd have to win 16 more games out of.
Let's see. That's 138. So they've got 24 games left. So they'd have to go, you know, Detroit can go 14-10, which is decent. And, you know, then they'd still be out. So you're forcing Detroit to go 15-9 or better. Well, they'd have to go better than 15-9 just to secure the spot. And then you're talking about a playoff if they go 15-9.
God, so that's still,
that's still my hopeful scenario. Like what would Major League Baseball do? I don't know. I don't know if there's ever been a scenario like this where you'd have, it's not going to happen, but within the realm of possibility, you know, say Baltimore, Detroit, Houston, and the Royals are all there at 88 wins, right?
I think or you say get to a stage
Baltimore
where
or New York, one of those two, because one of those two, just because Toronto, Boston, Baltimore, and New York are all in the mix, so one of those two
One of them has to win a division, so that'll have to happen. But yeah, in the process of all of them winning, one of those teams, and probably New York, will have to fade away. I just don't know. I think you get into a coin flip situations basically to determine like who will play who, and then those winners play the next team that won, and then that winner goes on into the wild card. You know,
you'd basically have a 4-team bracket to see who goes to the wild card. It'd be like the play-in game for the NCAA tournament, the play-in round, right? You got all 4 teams playing. 2 teams win, play each other, and then that team has to go and then play. So you're on your 4th or 3rd pitcher,
right?
Just to play the first wild card.
Plus bullpen usage, and you have like 3 days to get these games in.
Yeah.
Oof.
That would be. I mean, there's got to be a contingency plan for such an event were to occur, but man, that would be. That'd be stupid fun, though.
It would be as long as your team wasn't in it. If your team was just sitting at home, then it'd be like, yeah, all right, go for it.
Yeah, my anxiety would be through the roof if I was as a Royals fan. But, man, that would be, it'd be one of those things where, you know, when my daughter is grown up, so if she's a sports fan at all, and she's asking, man, what was that 4 days like when the Royals had to play a 4-game playoff to get to the 1-game playoff to get to the actual playoffs? I'd be like, oh, man, it was so insane. And it was the end of the most insane 3-year stretch the Royals have had. Or not the end, but the 3rd year of this incredible stretch. And
it'd be a 30 for 30.
It would be. That would be. There'd
like,
be books
that would
written.
Just and, be epic. It would be incredible to see that happen. And I kind of want it, again, as long as the Royals aren't a part of it.
Yes.
Because if the Royals are, I don't know if I have the nerves for that anymore. It's just,
I don't know.
Oh
my
God.
Nerves have been frayed beyond belief.
Like they had so many close games last fall that it's just like, God, I'll gladly take it if it gets to that point. You know, I will gut through it.
Yeah, I'd rather fray the nerves than move on to Chiefs season in October.
Right. I'd rather do that than watch Baltimore and New York play to determine who can play Toronto.
Oh, geez, that'd be awful.
Yeah,
oh, man.
That would suck. I don't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, that would put me in a position where I'd almost have to root for Cleveland just because I hate those other teams. Ugh.
Yeah, somebody else. But
gross.
Who knows if that'll actually happen. So I think we're going to take a quick break now, and then we get back, we're going to dive into some possible reason why the Royals haven't been as successful this year. So stick with us on the break. We'll hit you with that when we return, and we will see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
We saw 2 or 3 different replays. It was a bang-bang play at first, yet the replays show rather conclusively that the Royals got a tremendous, gigantic break.
The Vault.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your 3-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. As we mentioned before we went to break, we are going to discuss a little bit about some of the differences between, you know, there's obviously a lot of differences, mainly in the win column between last year's Royals team and this year's team. But one of the things, Mike, that you found that you were telling me about earlier, dealing with the Royals, something that they've prided themselves on, these their contact skills, their plate approach. Want to tell everyone what you found and kind of what you think it means for this current team.
Yeah, I went back and I looked at strikeout percentages last year and this year to compare the two. And, you know, last year, the caveat is last year the Royals were exceptional at making contact. 15.9% led the league by far. They were first in 15.9. That means they struck out in 15.9% of their plate appearances as a team. The next closest team in baseball was Oakland at 18.1%. So far and away, a very advanced contact team. Just in so many, as far as guys with more than 100 plate appearances, 10 guys, 10, you bat 9, 10 guys with 100 plate appearances or more were under 16.5% striking out in that kind of percentage. So Alex Gordon led the team of those regulars with 21.8, which really isn't that bad compared to the rest of the league. So I wanted to look at, you know, one of the things we talked about are injuries. You know, obviously you get your regulars injured, you're going to be bringing up replacement level guys or maybe untested guys or rookies. And I wondered what the difference really was as far as strikeouts compared, you know, between the last two seasons. And it's pretty stark. You know, how I cite Alex Gordon at 21.8% among regulars, that was the high last year among all regulars. This year, there are six players with 100 or more plate appearances who are higher than that in strikeout percentage. There are only three who fall under that 16.5%. And when you compare from last year to this year, only three players have improved their strikeout percentage. One of those is Paulo Orlando, who is kind of surprising because it would seem like, you know, as a kind of iffy guy, fourth outfielder type of guy, you would think he is somebody who might strike out more often with more exposure at the plate. He's got over 100, almost 150 more plate appearances, but his strikeout percentage has dropped 0.4 percentage points. Gerard Dyson, another guy I would think would get exposed with more playing time, has about 50 more plate appearances, and his has dropped from 16.4 last year to 12.1 this year, which is very good. The third guy is Mike Moustakas. And obviously, you know, he's not playing. He hasn't played since May. But his went from 12.4 last year and 614 plate appearances, which is excellent. Just fantastic. You wouldn't even expect that from Moustakas. To 11.5 and 113 plate appearances. And that's really where this kind of drove me to, like, look everything up, because those 500 plate appearances at the end of the year will have to go to somebody else who is not Mike Moustakas. And they're going to, you know, they go to Chester Cuthbert, as we've seen, who strikes out 20.1% of the time, which isn't awful. You know, it's not like that's really terrible or anything. But when you compare it to what Moustakas did last year, you can see how that might change things. You know, that's a lot of plate appearances where the ball is not put in play. And what we saw last year with the Royals was, you know, they put the ball in play so often, you make the defense make a play on it, weird things happen, it finds a hole. You know, even if, say, 25% of the time, league average generally works out to 30% of the time, but 25, let's say, let's be very conservative, 25 out of every 100 at-bats, you might get a hit out of that. So you can see how that might add up if you're getting fewer balls into play. And team-wide, this is just a huge thing. You know, you look at nearly every single player, it's gone up. From Escobar, who 11.3 to 13.2, Hosmer, Kane, Gordon, Morales, you know, a lot of these guys, Sal Perez, they're striking out more. They've already struck out more now than they did last year all season, and they're still
Wow.
24 games left. It's just I mean, you do have to accept last year it was exceptional, and that, okay, you know, that's a tough measure to follow. That's like, you know, when Greinke won the Cy Young in 2009, it's like, well, okay, go do better than that. Well, that's a pretty good year. It's tough to do better than that. It's like, you know, Wade Davis, okay, fantastic season as a reliever, now improve on it. Okay, at a certain point, it's just too good to get improved on. You know, and for this kind of day and age where strikeouts are generally up, you know, that's, you know, it's not like the end of the world, you know. They're striking out at a higher percentage than other teams in Royals history, or at least, you know, last year their 15.9 wouldn't have been the best in team history, but for the era, it was great. You look at this year, though, they're 20% of the time as a team they're striking out, and, you know, so that's an at bat where a guy is not getting moved over. That's an at bat where you're not hitting a sacrifice fly that could have come in handy in that homestand that we talked about in the first segment. So many times last night, they had, I think, three times where they got a runner on third with nobody out and they didn't score because they, you know, either struck out or they popped it up, or, you know, a combination of that. And it's like, maybe last year they actually get that ball into the outfield, and maybe you actually cash in that run instead of striking out and, you know, making it more difficult for you. And so overall, you know, you look at it team-wide, you know, they're still good relative to the league. They're out of the 30 major league teams, they're 10th best in strikeout percentage. So it's not like, you know, they're whiffing all the time, but for their standard, it's really a sharp difference. In fact, the 20% is the worst strikeout rate in Royals history for a team. And again, the condition that, okay, this is a high strikeout era, still, the Royals for years have been a good contact team. And this year they're not making that kind of contact. And so when you take out Moustakas, or you take out Ben Zobrist, and you take out even Alex Rios, you know, he didn't have a great year, but he didn't strike out that much. And you replace them with Brad Eibner and Chesler Cuthbert and Whit Merrifield and Raul Mondesi. And those guys, you know, they're green, they're rookies, they strike out a lot. And so that's a big difference of guys who are not getting the ball in play versus a lot of guys who did get the ball in play last season. And, you know, I don't think it's the only reason. And it's not like the Royals have collapsed because they aren't putting the ball in play as often. I think their power seems to be up a little bit. They've got a couple guys with 20 home runs already, with plenty of room to maybe make a run at 30. So they're getting some production from some of those guys, but team-wide, it's not that well-oiled machine that it was last year, where you get a guy on, you're going to move him over, they're going to find a way to get him in, and strikeouts are a big part of that. And it's you know, the sharpest, the worst kind of examples would be Sal Perez, who went from 14.8 last year, and a low strikeout percentage has been his kind of calling card, to 22.1% this year. Just he's already at 106 strikeouts. Last year, he only struck out 82 times. Alex Gordon, we saw in the first half, terrible strikeout numbers. He was striking out two times a night. He's gotten a lot better at that. It's still a pretty high 27.8%. And when you look at Raul Mondesi, 31.7% of the time he's striking out. And, you know, it shows that he's overmatched at this level. And I think the fact that he bunts half the time when he comes up is another indicator of that. But, you know, that's where the Royals are. They're at a point where they, you know, they didn't get Omar Infante back like they thought. They went with Merrifield. The league adjusted to him. He didn't make the adjustment back. They went with Mondesi. Mondesi can't make contact most of the time. You throw him a breaking ball, he's not going to hit it most of the time. And you know, those things, they do add up. And so when you have other players that you expect to put the ball in play, like Sal Perez, and Eric Hosmer was pretty good at it, and he hasn't been as good this year, and Lorenzo Cain, yeah, you're going to run into a situation where it's not the same kind of offense, and you have to kind of get that production from somewhere else, and it hasn't come up. And the Royals are kind of fortunate to just be even in the conversation, considering that, you know, they're not doing the same things as well last year this season. So, you know, it's I think that's a huge difference on top of just the general feeling that the lineup's not as deep. It's not as dangerous this year as it was last year. Because last year it was a test 1 through 9 once they got into the playoffs. Once they got Ben Zobrist, that really rounded it out. And this year there are soft patches. There are guys that you can probably get them out. And there are guys that even you rely on more that are striking out more regularly. And so as a result, you know, the Royals aren't playing as well generally. And I think that's a real big key when you look at that last homestand. Like I said, they didn't get those sac flies. And really, in situations like that, that's all you need to do sometimes is just get the ball in play and just do something with it. And the Royals swung through a few of them. And just really disheartening to kind of see a team not perform like you expect them to in situations where you've seen them succeed. So we'll see how it finishes the rest of the year, and maybe it'll rebound again next year. Maybe it'll continue. Maybe, you know, guys throw harder. I think this year the Royals are seeing more breaking balls than fastballs, which they showed last year they can hit fastballs. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the league is really just adjusting in that sense to not give them a pitch that they know that they can handle, and seeing what the Royals can do with it. And when the Royals start showing they can hit curveballs and sliders and stuff like that, then maybe the league will go back to fastballs. But, you know, that's what to watch over the last few weeks is how the Royals are putting the ball in play. If, as a team, they start striking out less and putting it in play, get guys on, make them steal. You've got all those pinch runners now, late game situations. If they rekindle that magic, that might be what fuels that 19-game jump from here to the end of the season that might put them into that wild card spot. And if they don't, you know, they probably don't make it.
That's the way it goes. 19-5. That's where we're headed for this Royals team. But the most interesting thing, the most interesting thing about what you said, you talk about relative to the league, the Royals aren't striking out an appreciable amount more than they were last year. Again, relative to the league. But it's kind of, we kind of discussed this a little bit before we started recording, but it's just, it kind of shows that the Royals truly are constructed in a unique manner, because, and when you talk about the money ball approach and you talk about, you know, how valuable getting on bases and things like that, being able to do it at a clip better than league average, you know, usually those things, if you could do them better than league average in a given year, is going to pay off. But in this particular scenario, the Royals may be better than league average in terms of how infrequently they strike out, but it's more about their success recently is more predicated on their ability to consistently make contact in these situations. It's exactly like what you're talking about, you know, the sac flies, those types of things that always seem to come through last year. You know, I mean, there were, everything was so automatic last year. I mean, it's really kind of interesting to
runner
really
on third,
think about.
Here comes a sac fly.
Right. I mean, it's just when you think happen. About how really good that team was, when you really sit back and think about it, I mean, that they were sitting there, they could just do whatever they wanted, and it worked, and it was so amazing. And now this year, you know, those things, they don't always work. And, you know, probably more often than not, actually, they haven't worked, and they haven't been able to get that run home and they really needed it. And even when they have, they'll give up a run that maybe they wouldn't in the last, you know, couple of years. So it's that was really kind of interesting when you brought that up. So I'm glad you kind of did the legwork on that and figured that out, because I thought that was really, really interesting, that what they pride themselves on and what has been the difference maker really in the playoffs the last couple of years has been their Achilles heel almost this year, and what has been a greater negative impact probably than anything else really besides injuries has been their lesser ability to make solid contact. So kind of interesting stuff.
Yep, and it's just, you know, it's not like they've completely started flailing at everything. It's just that the league is striking out more guys, and they just haven't been as good. And it's just, you know, that's the margin. That's the margin for error. If they're making contact 2% more, well, they probably have a few more wins because they probably come through in some more situations. It's just, you know, if that carries over, if that's just the league is always going to be that way and the Royals aren't going to get, like, the power gains, you know, because they're a guy, you know, their team's like, you'll gladly take a guy who strikes out 25% of the time if he'll hit 35, 40 home runs for you. You'll live with that. But if it's only a guy, if it's a guy like Eric Hosmer who only just cleared 20 for the first time in his life, you know, then it's not the same kind of thing. It's a little more suspect just because, and Hosmer's not striking out 25% of the time. It's only 19.4, but it's still one of those, you know, it's still higher than last year. And it's, he's one of those guys you kind of expect is going to be able to put the bat on the ball more often for this team, even if maybe he's still within normal range for a decent player on that metric overall across the league. It's still not, you know, last year's kind of measurement, which again, it's not, you know, they won the World Series. They won 95 games in a World Series. So it's like, it's tough to compare to last year because they were so good. But at the same time, you know, I'm a believer, once you show a skill until age, injury, or what else takes it away, you still have it. And I think that these guys can still make better contact overall. I mean, Gordon's been a guy who's always struck out a little bit in his career, but he'll also take walks. And, you know, that's kind of one of the things that you'll trade off. If he walks 9% of the time, you're fine if he strikes out a little bit more. But if it's someone like Escobar striking out more when he doesn't walk, well, that's where the issue comes in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just those kinds of situations where, you know, if you're getting something, even though someone's striking out some, it's fine. But you do expect these guys to maybe be better than they've been. You know, I was surprised that it was so widespread, really. It was just like not many people really improved. You know, as far as guys who stayed under that 16.5, Moose hasn't played since May, and Infante was cut in what, June? So, mm-hmm. You know, it's just pretty tough to kind of do the same things when your team looks drastically different in that kind of measurement.
It almost goes back to what you were saying about the Royals having a better chance if the win total is 91 wins for the wild card versus 88, and that when it comes to this particular skill that the Royals have, you know, they have to be elite level good for it to work off, it to work. But if they're just pretty good or very good, then you get the results that we're getting now. But when they can kick it up that notch, you know, we haven't gone kind of into the weeds really to look at, okay, what were their contact rates versus strikeout rates for their hot stretches versus their cold stretches and things like that. That'd be kind of an interesting thing to get into. Maybe I'll try and look into that before next show. But it's, you know, that's one of the things where it's like, it seems like, you know, if you're going to have that be your skill that you build your team around, you have to be elite at it. And when the Royals are just very good at it, top 10 in the league, which they are now, then your results aren't as good. But last year, they were absolutely elite at it. And the results showed. They were the best team in the American League. They won the World Series. So that's kind of an interesting little full circle twist to the show there.
Yeah,
that's what we're all about here.
They're going to have to play 2015 Royals baseball to do that kind of a stretch. And if they do, God help the rest of the AL, because
they're coming for you.
You wake up the Royals and there it is. But I mean, we'll see. It's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting. You know, I don't know how confident I am in anything working out that way. I think last week I said I think it's going to be Boston and Detroit in the wild card. Mm-hmm. I think I'd probably still stand by that. I think the Royals could probably jump up to maybe get above. I think they could definitely be right behind both of them by the end of it. I don't think Houston does much. And Dallas Keuchel is, I think he's getting shut down, or at least he's skipping a start or two, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what I saw, but like a shoulder thing. So, I mean, that's huge. The Yankees, I don't know how they keep winning, frankly. They don't look like that good of a team on paper, but they just kind of keep doing stuff. And Baltimore, I don't think they have the pitching to do that. They have like one good pitcher, and he's their closer, and that's about it. So I just don't think that they can keep it up. But there's still a lot of teams that the Royals have to get past. So, you know, if they go on that kind of big stretch like we talked about, that'll be a lot of fun.
That would be intensely fun. So who knows? We'll see. We'll have, just as we will for the rest of the way here, we'll have a better idea next week on how close that is to happening.
Yeah.
Then the 19-5 stretch that we all know is coming. We'll see if that can actually occur. So stick with us next week. We'll have even more updates and possibly more fun facts and figures to know and tell to your friends after you inform them of how great the Kansas City Baseball Vault is that you listen to every week and that they should too. Once you get that out of the way, then you can tell them about all the fun facts that you learn for listening. And thank you so much for listening to the show. We couldn't do it without you. We love you guys, all the fans, everyone who listens every week. We appreciate it so much. And, of course, we appreciate our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, and, of course, Baseball Prospectus that lets us post our wonderful podcast on their wonderful page. Be Pro Kansas City, or BP Kansas City, which, by the way, if you don't go there at least every day, then you should. Lots of great writers on there. Fantastic stuff.
Yep.
For my money, and I am biased 100%. It's the best Royals content in the Kansas City metro area. So, you know, for what it's worth.
Your mileage may vary. Yes. But I agree. I agree with everything you said there. So
100% thumbs up. Two thumbs up.
Two to four things pretty much every day at BP Kansas City. So if you're into the Royals, and that's going to be even in the off season, no matter what happens to the Royals this year, playoffs or not, it's going to end up being a lot of content, minor leagues analysis, some history. Darren Watson usually does really good pieces on, you know, this is the cool thing that he does. He'll take a baseball card of a Royal, and if it's like an 87 Tops, he'll talk about, like, I think it was an 87 Charlie Liebrandt or something. He'll talk about Charlie Liebrandt's 1987 season. And it's just really good stuff. And so I think that's one of the things that I really like to read up on top of, you know, what Dave Lesky brings for analysis and Craig Brown, who's the godfather of Royals blogging pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, and Clint Scholes brings all the minor league stuff, and Hunter Samuels does a little bit of everything, and we do this show, and Clark is kind of the guy who mutters at you to get off his porch, pretty much.
Basically.
Which has a place.
It does, indeed.
His insight is important and insightful, too. So he had a good thing today on what Luke Hochaver meant for this team and where he might have fit in some of these bullpen scuffles that the Royals have found themselves in. And, you know, he's right on. If Luke Hochaver's around, you might not need Chris Young. You might not need to go to Herrera in one of those situations. You might, you know, be able to extend a game differently. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that that's on BP Kansas City pretty much every day.
Yep. So if you're not going there, you need to. But if you're one of the people who happen to have our podcast via iTunes or something and you don't get it from BP Kansas City, then make your way over there. Lots of good stuff. But thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be here next week, the rest of the season, the off season, the whole deal. You know the drill. We're here for you to bring you Royals content. That's what we do. Thank you so much for listening. We love you all. Until next time, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi,
send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.